Everybody, welcome back to another exciting episode of the Over Sharon Show. We have a guest today, but before we get into that, I'm going to say hi. Thank you, guys. Thank you, everybody in the chat, for coming here and hanging out with us. You guys are the best. Anyway, I just wanted to say that before I forgot. Hey, Sharon, how are you today?
Hey, I'm good. Not too bad. Not too shabby.
Yeah, and our guest today is Steve, aka Zerilath. That's his channel where you can find him on YouTube and various other places, but we'll give him a chance to plug all that. How are you doing today, Steve?
Hey, dude. Thanks for having me on. With all these conversations I've been watching you have on the show, it was just like, oh man, there's always so much to talk about.
Indeed.
Yeah, always so much to overshare.
Indeed. Yes. And I'm all about oversharing. People just want me to shut up.
Well, you came to the right show. Because we overshare, and that's all we do here.
And so, share alike.
Yep.
Exactly. So we're going to start.
I offend you while I smash your reality.
Yeah. No, trust me. I know what that's like. Now I just keep my mouth shut these days, unless I'm recording on the Oversharing Show. That's why I have it. So then I could just share on here. So I have a quote for today, and then Sharon's going to pull a card. The quote is, "The man who can sincerely thank God for the things which as yet he owns only in imagination has the real faith." And that's by Wallace D. Waddles.
Who's like that guy?
Penguin.
Wallace the Waddler?
Waddler. Yeah. That's a funny, good question. Kind of name. I think he's an author. From the quote is dated from 1910.
His last name is Waddles. He must be British.
Yeah.
You must have gotten it from that list of quotes from Archaics.
Yeah, channel. I totally did.
I had a feeling.
Mm. Yeah, he's got a whole video with like really good quotes that I always like to draw from.
Yeah.
Nice, you guys.
Crazy how Archaics just like falls into everybody's laps after X amount of years. He's explained that he's had books written. I'm like, what?
My right? Note, tell
it's,
me about
it's all it's almost like Jason is a Mandela effect in and of itself. This guy's had 17 books with all the answers. What?
I know, right? Insane. Where have you been this whole time? Look at that. Ooh. the ace of cups. Nice.
New stories about emotions. Brandon, would you like to overshare, or is there a left would you like to start?
Yeah, why don't you start, Steve? What do you think about the ace of cups?
Wow. Okay. Yeah. You know, a big thing that I worked on myself as I was deciding to distinguish myself from my peers, looking at what I thought was just, you know, if I keep going with the same attitude that's very popular among my peers, I'm going to be like a kind of a weaker person. And the journey was had a lot to do with going through emotional maturity and having that resolve without denying your emotions, to have your emotions but to be in control of your emotions. And I feel like I'm there on the level that I was at least imagining those many years ago when I sat there and I said, why don't enough people care about how little 9/11 makes any sense? You know, so like I've been on that level of transformation really kind of since before that, but you know, I was a child at that time, right? So I had the luxury of living in all of the playthings that have consumed the psyche of my peers that are of my generation, you know, where they're living in some weird parallel system of values that is forged by their personal relationship with like Star Wars and all these things. And I'm sitting there and I'm just like, I can't believe that you guys can't bridge in a real way the change you need within yourself by what you get out of these fictions that you just choose to use as toys when there's cooler stuff that the adults get to do with what these fictions have gifted to your iMagi nation. And
Magi.
And I didn't feel that for a while because it took a while for me to go through the journey that needed to look at the occult, needed to look at concepts of energy, and all these other things that kind of came along with the territory of being interested in ufology, being interested in stopping evil before the next terrorist attack thwarted by our own people were to occur, and all these different things. And so I was straight up outright into waking people up before woke became a defiled terminology by the superficiality of leftist socialist thinking back when it was just about the truther movement, and truthers had a lot of breathing room to question things because there wasn't as much pain with the truth coming out as it was by the time politics changed in 2016. And then all of a sudden, there was a strange target on people of my variety's back. It's like, oh, they're flipping the script now. I guess we're winning. The game is now on, right? And then I couldn't have possibly imagined. My greatest miscalculation was what people's willingness to do when 2020 came. That completely flipped my relationship with the entire world, with all of humanity, all the people in it. My parents, various relationships with people. It protects you, but it really screws you up at the same time.
Yeah, dude, for sure. It's crazy how you used to be able to talk about truth and things like that. Like, even right up till that thing that happened in 2020 that we will not name, I was friends with some people and I was hanging out with them, and I'd always talk about like crazy conspiracies and stuff. And then when this happened, they asked me what my opinion was. And then I gave it to them, and then they stopped hanging out with me. So that's all right. They're lost.
Yeah, yeah. I've learned that I leave them a leading piece of information, and I let them ask themselves, do you want to hear something that won't make sense to you the first time I say it? That's all. That's basically, I lead with something that tells them that. Then I open it up.
Planting seeds.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I've met some people recently that I have that are colleagues, and they're not across the threshold. They're just at the point of knowing that it's all screwed up. But then also on an independent level, he was telling me how he's actually interested in the history of ancient Egypt and stuff like that. He's fascinated by the ideas of pre historic advanced civilizations of various sorts. He's into that kind of thing. And so while I'm just in the middle of being enriched with the logos of Archaics, I'm able to also tell him stuff that's just fresh in my psyche. You got to talk about the Anunna, the Anunnaki, but it's not like the way Zachariah Sitchin told it because he screwed up the timeline, and da-da-da. You start going through the whole darn thing because I've been working on so many things. And then Jason, just like I, went fiendish on that one particular question he was looking for and went through complete objectivism in his process, delineating it, being very careful about how he establishes his value sets You know, because he's not trying, he doesn't like shitting on good things, right? Like, you know, it's like Zachariah Sitchin, good things, screwed up these particular aspects of it, and it has to be said, and that misconception has to be broken, which also means, you know, you have to shatter a sacred cow for some people, because Sitchin, you know, sometimes an author like that gets a bit people of the bookish kind of credit, and people start living by the reality that it's got to fit into the interpretation of Sitchin, or, you know, or Daniken, or something like that, right? It comes from a very academic regiment kind of thing, and it's kind of like building a brand.
Yeah, yeah, and all, it's funny how all that Ancient Alien stuff, I was into that stuff years ago. I read some Sitchin and Eric von Daniken, and it's like they take the truth, and it's anybody who has any kind of question that questions this reality, like you were saying before. And it gives them somewhere to go and somewhere to feel like they're actually looking into things, when it's just kind of a trap at the end of the day, unless you leave your mind open. It's just like the New Age, you know, like the New Age, they have all these concepts that are really cool, but it's just a trap at the end of the day. It's a place.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, the New Age is kind of, you know, it's, the PSYOP people, they love their pacifist types, so that gets a whole lot of they give it a whole lot of attention, because it gets people into a state of surrender, because they're all just dealing with their personal shit while also having the awareness that there's terrible whatever's over there, and their spiritual answer is so like vague, you know. It's just like, Who are you praying to, you know, creator? Oh, the spirit, the this, and it's always in the vagueness of, oh, you know, well, we're praying to a vibrational energy field. It almost feels like, right? And I think that comes from the Buddhist influence, which is partially grabbled because of Lamaism, and the Buddhism was kind of a reform of trying to replace the way the shamanism of the Mongolian civilization, the Mongolian peoples are around just around and before the time of the Khans, right? And so there's this Eastern spiritual discipline, which works in India a great deal, works in China a great deal, you know, all this Eastern stuff. And there's not much about it coming from a place for the sacred warrior, right? Everything is kind of feminized. Everything's feminized. Everything's sanitized. There's very little consideration for shadow work. And, you know, all of us here, you know, we all have a common bond under things like Owen Benjamin and shadow work, right? even if those things maybe don't relate to each other, we relate to each other through both of those things, plus many, many more.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
And I've noticed, and it's why I never became a New Ager, but I played in their pool to get the gnosis, if you will, to catch the vibes, to learn a thing or two about energy and stuff. And there's still some New Agey things about me. I do Qigong in the most heathen way you could possibly imagine, but it's Qigong nonetheless.
That's really awesome. And so, like, you're starting to speak about the spiritual stuff. And before we get into the questions that we have for you, because this discussion is mostly kind of, we want to gear it toward like knowing about your spiritual journey,
yeah,
like how it began. And, you know, we just have some questions for you. So,
sure. I'll do my best, because it comes so intermixed in there with me, because of my, you know, just, I had to walk various stories together, but yeah, I'll keep it focused.
Okay. So I wanted to start by asking you, like, how you grew up, what kind of background, was it Christian? Was it whatever it was? And then, mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll just start with that.
Right. I was raised here, where I live now. I've always lived here, in a Italian Catholic family of you know, of the Catholic ilk that you get out of like the Hudson Valley area of New York, which has a lot of interesting values. But my grandfather on my father's side was Protestant, and that side of it is part of the Norse aspect of my ancestral journey, but that comes much later because that's very, very recent in my life. This heathen awakening is when I became certain that was the answer I was looking for to particular aspects of this chapter of my life. I had a there was a certain point where I just kind of hated Sunday school stuff and the church stuff, and it was just like, I don't know, something's really weird with all this stuff. Like, because, you know, like, there's the biggest problem with the church, which it takes a long time of reconciling what you're looking at, is that the church is a pagan amalgamation trying to shove all of these particular things that match a biblical rationale into one God that used to be a particular pagan God. And then over time, a group of people put all of creation for everybody in their will upon this God as what I believe is a misrepresentation, right? So you're seeing like all these disparate beliefs that have been mixed together without any like respect to where they came from, and always in the context of these terrible ways for people that were being sinners and were going to burn in hell, and look at how bad their lives were because they weren't part of the church, and look how the church substantially increase their lives, and that all seemed like what the situation was. But at the end of the day, that might have been all well and good, but I had no heart connection with the church because I needed to get away from what were occult elements that I should not, that I believed I should not be interacting with, because I could trust no one with telling me what it all really meant. Right? It's like, at looking back at it, understanding it now from my pagan eyes, it's just like, you know, a young boy, a young girl, they need to have that paternal and maternal figures that help you go through manhood initiation, and they're supposed to bridge the trust on a personal level. You don't get sent to school. You don't give someone to someone else to give them their values. And I probably on a deeper level just said like, why can't mom and dad just do this? Right. That might've been part of it, but also something unsaid, because you're also conflicted about your own parents in many ways, you know, at a certain young age. And so you kind of want to get away from them because you want to see new people now at this age. It's not just about always being around mom and dad making you happy with the things they can gift you with when you're being a sweet little boy and all that stuff. And so it was always interesting knowing about Protestantism and this whole thing where grandpa did different customs, and you know, and he didn't do the confessional and all that stuff and didn't take communion, and funny enough, didn't like going to the doctor very much either. And I don't know if it was for based reasons. If they were, they must have been deeply, deeply private. But, you know, my dad criticizes me for being like that, you know, and he thinks like, and look how grandpa did. Grandpa was pretty old when he died. You know, he died in like 2002. He was part of the World War II generation. And it's just like, reasonably, you would say that, you know, he died at a pretty ripe old age. You know, grandma died 20 years later, you know. So granted, It's not like the health system was doing them a tremendous amount of favors, but I know that my grandfather was in bad health for only a very short period of time before he passed away. Where grandma, being more subject to medicine, went through a whole lot of other kinds of suffering, right?
Yeah.
So there's comparatives. There's comparatives here that like affect you in different ways, right? Because things were much better for how my grandfather passed, just thanks to the times that we were in at that time. But at a certain point in my tweens, I met a friend who lived down the street who was the pastor's son at a Pentecostal church. And so I became a born again Christian, because I liked what he was saying about, Jesus more than what the Catholic idea of Christ is like, or perhaps it was really just maybe like there was a spirit there. Maybe it was the Holy Spirit. Maybe it was just, you know, some fairy folk that like to fuck with white people. I don't know. but you know, there was a better spirit, about them. It was better for my social development, my emotional health. You know, I was kind of really screwed up, as a kid for having a really bad, relationship with my family. It was very, very weird, but in retrospect, it was because I kind of had empathic activation at a very early age, or never lost my empathic stuff when I went through a certain transition out of resistance, because, you know, I think I said it earlier, if I didn't, you know, you have to have all your feelings, right? Including the bad ones, because, you know, like they're there, they don't mean that you're bad, but you are processing, you know, something going on, but it's just feelings. The universe cares about your actions, but you do have to process your feelings. Yes. By the early 2000s, I felt like I had reached a limit to my ability to expand in my spirituality with just being a Christian. And I asked myself, like, am I about to go to hell because I'm about to, walk away from the church but keep Jesus with me per se, but not really worshiping him, you know, like this kind of thing was going through me, because I needed to break without, and not because I needed to be a sinner, although considering a little bit of premarital sex was definitely there, but not as a freak about it with like too many partners or whatever. That just wasn't the way I was. You know, at a certain point, I just couldn't handle being the kind of person for multiple partners, unless it was like something agreed upon with the committed woman. But that's all. I'm only mentioning that because, you know, that's part of, you know, you're growing up. It's all the conflicts, moral conflicts, right? And trying to do healthy things like that, and not trying to just sit there and say, because I believe the Bible is wrong about certain things, and that the church is wrong about certain things, that that I'm going into being a quote sinner unquote. I just wanted to get all the pressure of all of that off of me, you know, just get it off of me. I need to breathe. I need to live. And I still believe in God. And if that's not good enough, then I'd rather burn in hell. Right, like that's kind of where I eventually kind of put myself, right? I can't remember if I put myself there before or after 9/11, but certainly looking at what the George W. Bush alleged evangelical neocon Christian good guy thing going on that I kind of liked about him. And then just looking at what the doofus he was for a year, and then the doofus he was after that particular year, while also talking tyrannically, in a way that was being glossed over, twisted, and pitched by the media, I said, something's very wrong with the way people understand right and wrong. Something's very wrong here.
Yeah, it's funny. And, it's like people expect a Hitler or whatever to be like Hitler was portrayed or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, they let people get away with so much when they act like a doofus. It's freaking hilarious.
Yeah, they do. And one of the good things that does come out from giving yourself exposure to the Eastern mysticisms is that it's much healthier. I think that before the monotheist situation came on, I think that we understood better right and wrong. And we also understood that we were not perfect, but that also didn't mean that we allowed wrong to go unpunished, right? So, but you took care of it yourself. You didn't beg God to do it so that way God could be the murderer and not you. If you understood that something was done so wrong that the best thing to do is perhaps to extract vengeance and to kill a man, well, you've got to really be at a healthy measure of reason and heart to put yourself there, right? And I think a lot of our ancestors were like that. But we lost that long ago, where a lot of that was still kept in the East, you know, such as the traditions of the people of Japan, who, you know, they never yielded on their animism, on the Shinto faith, and such. And of course, India, who also never relented in these things. And if you just go back far enough, you know, all that stuff makes sense, where, you know, it's kind of like what it says in the Bible, but spun in a good way. Yeah, we do know right and wrong. We do. Otherwise, we would not tolerate our neighbors. We'd sit there and just somebody makes up the idea of like, my neighbor has been in his house for 3 hours. Only an evil person is in his house for 3 hours when the sun is up. I must kill him. He has killed somebody. I know it. Right? Like, that's crazy talk, right? And people think that, like, that's what people, like, will do if there isn't, like, this one god of the law, you know, and a long, elaborate, complicated explanation of the law, which, at the end of the day, when it boils down to your own judgment, you just revert back to a more rational version of the crazy example that I just gave, where you do an investigation and you find out exactly how wrong has been done. And you also don't worry about things like people's fucking privacy, and you let them have as many hours in their house as they want, because I don't hear any screaming, do you?
All right. You got soundproof walls.
Well, sure. That's very true. But guess what? If somebody goes missing, guarantee you, somebody cared about that somebody who went missing. And yeah, exactly. Soundproof your walls all you want. Eventually, things will track back to you.
Yeah, for sure. And I like what you said, too, about, because I feel so many people they miss that entirely, where they have this whole belief system where they're like, well, here's the law. God knows this. I got to look to God for everything. When it's like, well, if you're made in his image and you're a creation, don't you think you could be able to tell right and wrong internally on your own?
Yeah. And even I remember like reading the Bible, like the New Testament, and I think it was the book of Romans. And I think it's at the very beginning. And he's basically saying, like, you have it within you to know what, you know, right and wrong, basically. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, you do.
Yeah.
And if you're made in his image, like Brandon said, like, why do you have to put it on God to tell you, like,
right,
you are made in his image. You are God. You can do that yourself. That's why he gave you a freaking mind, precise, consciousness and brain and whatnot.
look, if you can do as good as people like us, well, you know, being what any rational person would know is not some sort of extra special sinner who definitely is evil enough to be in hell because we're certain that's what happens when you don't worship Christ. With the exception of that, it's like you're turning this alleged original sin into your greatest strength, you know, and it is the wisdom of the serpent. And so at least Christians will get it when you quote Jesus about being as wise as serpents, and they don't even care about the context. So it's great. You can just say it and they'll be like, ah, he got me.
Yeah.
I'm schooling them left and right.
Serpent in the garden.
Right.
Dare we say, so that was kind of a little bit about your spiritual journey, right? As you're figuring things out, right?
Yeah.
And so I think you said you've come to the point where you're, I can't remember if you said heathen or pagan. And to me, they're very similar. I remember, I feel like Benjamin Balderson talked about the difference between them. And if I remember correctly, and I could be misquoting him or somebody else, but I remember it being like, you're either from the plains or you're from the mountains, and one was pagan and one was heathen. And they're basically the same thing. You're just living in accordance with nature. And this whole Christian movement of Catholicism or whatever came in and started to get these people, and they wanted them in the city. They wanted them in their churches, and they couldn't get them in there, but by demonizing them and calling them these names. And literally, right, pagan or heathen just literally meant people just live outside in nature, and they demonized it to mean like, oh, they're not Christian like us.
They demonized all these different levels of things. You know, the reason why they gave Satan horns, they gave the devil horns, is to make you look at any gods, any spirits that were associated with any kind of horned beast, and to consider that an evil thing. So you've got like bulls, which of course are named in association with Baal, and we all understand that. But at the same time, you know, like some people didn't do child sacrifice to bull gods. They may have sacrificed a slave. They may have sacrificed a prisoner that that was worthy of death or something along those lines. And then of course various, you know, animal sacrifices. You sacrifice a cattle to the bull, so on and so forth, and all of that stuff is rituals that go back to their known incarnation in ancient Sumerian times, ancient Egyptian times. It was the age of Taurus in our procession of the equinoxes.
The bull.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the bull.
Crow talks about that.
And it just means Lord. It's a title, not a name, right? So there's all sorts of Baals. You know, there's Baal Zebub. It's not Belzebub. Mm-hmm. It's Baal as his title. It's Lord Zebub, which means the flies.
Lord of the flies.
Exactly, right? And so when you take a closer examination, I think what the Bible is trying to say about Babylon, as far as the paganism of it all is concerned, is that Babylon, their culture seemed to fluctuate between when they were worshiping their gods to when they were worshiping various spirits. And you don't worship spirits. Spirits don't even have their own agency. Spirits are kind of like sentient programs in the simulation. The simulacrum, as Jason says it, or the simulacrum in the reality field that permeate in our ether through the conscious plasma, right? So these are localized spirits of certain things, but they are not gods. But they build an idol to them, and they make offerings to them, and they're giving these spirits the god treatment. When all they're doing is feeding a demon, because then that reflects back on them as a tribe as a whole, because they're taking on the humanized attributes of things. So what does it mean when you're worshiping a spirit of bugs like this, of the fleas and the flies and the mosquitoes, perhaps the grasshoppers? I mean, did it fly just literally mean like flies, or was it just anything that
flied,
liked to surround corpses? Was it all about just corpses? So it was just specifically the fly, like the common house fly that we know. Is that always the context of the word when they translated it? That gets into the etymology. When I finally hit the etymology game, it answered a tremendous amount of questions.
That reminds me of like syncretism and astrotheology and the stuff that Santos talks about, because he can always relate words by their etymology. He can just always relate words, even though our modern etymology won't tell you, but he'll just say words and then he'll like extrapolate all these words like Adam, A-D-A-M and A-T-O-M and etym. Yeah. See, like etymology, Adam.
Yeah.
Like even that could be related to that word. So right, he just like breaks stuff down. And it's really.
It's certain relationships between certain vowels and consonants, right? Vowels are highly fluid. So, and especially if you are dealing with various manners of subconscious magic, like Kabbalistic magic and whatnot. You'll notice it in the sigil craft. If you ever read up on how you make sigils, you take out all the vowels and any repeating consonants of the word that you are crafting into its archaic and occulted form as a sigil to manipulate the emotion of the subject, right? And manipulate's got a negative connotation to it, and I'm making a neutral connotation. I just want you to understand when I say manipulate, because I do sigil craft myself with the runes. You know, you get like T and D. Those, if you just go tuh, you just go duh, you'll realize that both of them just involve an air passage blockage where the tip of the tongue hits the roof of the mouth to shape the sound, right? There's a name for consonants that fit that model. I'm trying to remember where my etymology book.
They're stops.
Yeah.
They're stops because they stop. So I studied linguistics and phonetics and phonology. And so those are the P, T, and K, and the B, D, and the G. They're voiced and voiceless counterparts of each other. So pa and ba, and if you for like pa and ba, ta and da, ka and ga. So if you put your hand on your fingers on your voice box, and you say like pa, like you say pa 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 pa, or ba 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 ba, you'll notice they have the same placement in the mouth when you're making the vocalization, or the mouth movement. But when you say there's no voice. When you say bu, you're activating your voice box. So they're the same. And that's the same with T and D. So you have t and d. And then and then K and G. So you have k and g. So they're voiced and voiceless counterparts of each other. So when you have like a word like like British will say butter and Americans will say butter, it's because it's vowels are always voiced, in at least in English, vowels are always voiced. So when you're saying the and then the the is voiced because you can feel your voice box, and then that's voiced. So in British English, they'll say but So they'll stop voicing to say the T sound, then they'll voice again. In English, we don't stop to stop our voice. We just keep our voice going. So we just say butter, like we never stop and go t. So that's what happens with words like butter and better and things like that. They use the same placement, but yeah, they activate or deactivate the voice.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. This is my favorite etymology book. Those of you who have seen me on one of my Made by Jim Bob appearances on one of the shows, I show off this book, The Origin of English Words, a discursive dictionary of Indo-European roots by Joseph T. Shipley. This is some heavy duty reading. Like, you know, like you get into all these prefixes and suffixes, like simple stuff, and it'll be like pages of stuff, like K-E-R. There, that, like, this page alone is like, that's like the fourth variation. Several pages on just K-E-R, five or six different contexts and origins of K-E-R, cur, right? So in this one, in the preface, before it gets into the word origins, it gets into the actual oral tradition mechanics. And there's a passage called consonant shiftings, and you'll like this. Many of the consonantal
or whatever,
yes, variations have been set into a pattern known as Grimm's Law, established in 1822 by the fairy tale man Jacob Grimm. Here it is as applied to English. Now, we all have to do our work about, like, Grimm is definitely somebody who had an agenda, not saying otherwise. But this is yet still just knowing that that's part of what we're dealing with, right? And this part could be actually good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Words that in early time began with one of the sounds listed below may later have changed to the next sound to the right. So there are three types: gutturals, dentals, and labials. Those are the three different ways that we use our mouths to make various sounds. So
just to interrupt you real quick, you have the p and the b. Those are labials because you're using p b to stop the sound, and they're called stops because they actually stop sound, like they stop the breath from going through. So you can't say p and keep saying it forever. You just say p and it stops. Mm-hmm. So then those are labials. Then you have the t and the d, those are dentals. And then you have k and g, and those are gutturals.
Yes. Excellent. So you know it. All of that is right in here. It gives examples. So gutturals are genus, kin. I don't know if that's choler or kohler.
Kohler. It has to be kuh, because yeah, then that's guttural.
Yeah. Gall, host, guest. And then dentals, dual, two, triple, three, fume, dust. And then labials, bucket, pocket, paternal, fatherly, fragile, break.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's all sorts of details like that in this book. And I thought it was interesting that there were three of those because of my interests in metaphysical manifestations of trinities that are nothing like the Trinity.
The Trinitu. How the dare
Trinity,
you?
Trinitarians. St. Nicholas was a Trinitarian. Fuck that guy.
How dare he? So just to kind of get more into your thoughts on like where are you at in your journey, in your spiritual journey, you said, did you say you're a heathen?
Yeah.
And if you can explain. You
know, I'm a heathen, I'm a pagan, I'm an animist, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. I'm kind of fluid with it because okay. I'm kind of building all of the different contexts that those mean. I can't call myself a pagan all the time because, well, it's about a man off the land, right? There's plenty of times I'm in the suburbs. I've got a garden that I'm experimenting with because I'm not great at gardening. Right. So theoretically, calling myself a pagan is only pseudo true.
Right.
In the context.
That's why I don't call myself anything.
Yeah. Right. But heathen, you know, heathen is has got a very it's a little bit it feels a little bit more broadly inclusive that you don't necessarily have to be like always one of the land. You know, because I'm in civilization as much as I am in the wild.
Okay, cool.
Sharon is a Sharitarian.
Sharitarian.
I'm just a Sharonite.
Sharonite.
So some of the things that I've seen you talk about, or that I feel like you know about, include things like Norse mythology, Odin. I don't know how you called him. Runes. And maybe the Havamal, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yes, you did.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you talk a little bit about some of those things and how they relate to what you've looked into and how you, you know, how you use them or how you're comfortable with them, et cetera.
At a certain point, you know, I went and I, had put my study focus involving, you know, ancient history, into kind of, you know, fixing what seemed to be stolen from the memories of basically the European men and the men of North America that came from Europe, you know, the white man, et cetera, the Northmen, if you will. And in this, I was getting, I was learning about all the different things that were like, oh yeah, you know, this quality that you learned, was there with the Catholics. Oh yeah. That was totally gaslit. That was Odin, you can pronounce it both ways. It's both of them are equally true. The ode or the oath. It's a little bit tomato tomato, because of variance in tribes, in families that were of, those particular cults, and their understanding of the All Father.
We get the word Wednesday, Odin's Day.
Yes, that's from the more Germanic Wotanas. That's Wotan. Yes. And so that's like part of Odin's reach to the east, because that's like the way that's like the Germans, the more Western Baltic people before it kind of shifts over to being more like Perun focused, which is the Slavic version of Thor. So on and so forth. And when I started to understand the qualities of the gods in men that were there and applied with Odin or Freyr, and Freyr, like Baal, means Lord, by the way. It's a completely different meaning of Lord, right? So that's just what you said when referring to your god, if you were one who is akin to the Vanir way of the gods, which is a bit different, more on the primal side than what the more Aesir oriented cults like Thor and Odin would be, because they are sky gods. There's much more going on with the interest in the heavens, where with the Vanir, it's much more of an interest on the earth, the natural world on the earth versus per se, the what is flies in the air, what is cosmic in the heavens inspiring you, right? So that has a lot to do with how different tribes would shape their mindsets, right? And so you can play off of that because there's more horned god references for Vanir gods because of all the various horned beasts that would be of a Vanir domain, right?
Can you say that word Vanir and can you spell it? I don't know that I've come across it.
Okay. Vanir. Vanir is V-A-N-I-R. The Vanir, the name basically kind of means like the wind, right? And it's in context to these to the nature spirits, the earth spirits, you know, like when you're on that hike and you're seeing the deer and the coyotes and the various birds and all that stuff, that is Frey and Freyr's realm, right? You are walking amongst their spirits. That is the Lord and the Lady of the Earth. And you will show them the respect and the love that they would show you.
Okay, and Freyr and Freya, is Freya where we get Friday?
Yes, both Freya and Freyr. I think they made Friday out of all of those. So it's also Frigga, who is a different goddess than Freya. I used to think they were the same goddess in different contexts.
I would have thought the same. Okay.
Yeah, but they're actually not. Frigga is the cosmic mother. She's an Aesir goddess. She's represented. Her and Odin are both represented by Ursa Major. Under certain contexts, Ursa Major tells stories of Frigga, and under other contexts, Ursa Major tells stories about Odin. So it's Odin and Frigga. It depends on the time of the year as well, because it's the position of Ursa Major that determines things like Odin hanging off the world tree for 9 nights, which is effectively, I think that's when Ursa Major is facing south on the grand clock. You know what I mean?
Yes. Awesome.
You're gonna put your button down.
So, So tell us a little bit about runes and how you use them.
Well, that's a great question, because we were just talking about Odin. I just mentioned him hanging from Yggdrasil, which is the origin of the runes themselves. So the runes is a word. The word itself means secret or whisper. And what this means in the deeper context is that it is a secret coded language that unlocks powerful magic from these seed sounds of creation from within the fire element. Even runes that have that don't seem to have an association with fire at all, the rune by its energetic merit, when you understand it deepest, it's all fire, because it comes from there's a deep meditation over fire that comes from understanding the way we talk in that respect. And there's people's language patterns reflect the element of their greater family or familial relationship, which this gets back to ancient stories such as the Hopi. And the Hopi talk about how the four tribes broke up, right? And so men of the north who became the white men, they went north to master fire. And so their language would derive some of their magic, much of their magic, because of invocations. So the sounds that are made by things that burn would be sounds that the primitive language that came up from the northern tongue would come through with them. And that's why the white man has a general way of speaking that he does that you can hear in cadence and tone and texture that has got a certain familiarity to the ear. And then I've noticed that, like, if you ever listen to like the Navajo, the Diné language, it's a very rough language. It almost sounds like the sounds of sandpaper or stompings or thuddings, right? It's earth hitting earth. That's an earth language, earth invocation magic. You get access to all the elements through your magic, but you have to go through your element primary as part of your core. I mean, it's going to be there because it's going to be in your language, which is important to releasing that purest form of what that comes from, because it's coming from a deep emotional place that honors the ancestors, and that gets you in a healthier connection with the power that the gods gifted us with.
Yeah, awesome. It's funny you mention that, because really quickly, if you think about how people talk in like tribal Africa, they have all these like clicks and pops that might be associated with water.
Yes, exactly.
Crazy.
Exactly. Water, like when it's like, you know, when it's like dripping.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Precisely. Yeah. And that's and you look at the relationship between the men of the north and the men of the south. You know, like when like a race riot happens, it's because the men of the north turn up their heat on the men of the south, and we're boiling their water.
Wow.
We're boiling their water, and we don't realize that we're doing it because we've forgotten about our unconscious magic. Wow. Aleister Crowley said that we do that everybody does magic unconsciously, usually.
Well, it's like the media. The media knows how to do it, though. We all haven't forgotten. The media knows how to get that water boiling.
Right. But all they think that they're doing is ethical manipulation through marketing, right? Like you know, like ethics and morality is a different thing in like the marketing world, where like all these campaign guys, it's just like they're not evil, but they just get paid to use their speechcraft.
I right? always hated marketing.
Right, exactly. You know, and you know, they're corrupted, like, to use the Lord of the Rings parlance that we love, you know, the media is like Saruman. And the books affirm this, because in a couple of different places in the book, they remind you that Saruman was a master word crafter. He knew how to grip people and inspire them one way or the other with their emotions and the way his words worked, and that's how he got the wild men to start sacking people of Rohan and things like that. Right? It's the same thing with, like, you know, telling all these kids, you know, that the enemy is not this guy, it's that guy, and then all of a sudden they're all Antifa'd up and going to war over whatever, exploiting them unconsciously, and you as the wizard knew better, right?
Yep, but they're still, at the end of the day, though, the problem is that, well, the way I believe they might view it ethically is they're getting people to still choose to do that. They're not forcing right. anybody.
Yeah, precisely, and it's part of the karmic contract game that they're playing, and many of our laws also reflect that, which is why it's a part of our big responsibility to try to plant those seeds, because there's plenty of good people that have sadly very good reasons for doing things they don't even realize are foolish.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. That's pretty much the whole country, I would say, right?
Yeah. But
anyway, yeah. Back to runes.
Yeah. Before you go back to runes, I just wanted to know, you mentioned the fire, the people that speak fire and the people right. that speak earth, like yep. the natives, and then the, like Brandon was saying, water. The Africans yeah. that speak like water.
Yeah.
And who, what's air?
That's the Asians.
Oh.
That's why in Asia you get what? You get breathing meditation, consistently, Qigong work, all of this involves the air. All of it is energies in the air, the breath work, the you know, your holy prana, the Qigong energy work, things you do in martial arts is about having your body know how to cut through with little wind resistance, right? Mm-hmm. To blade your body, to move fluently and have the air, have the atmosphere work in your favor. And then of course you eventually get, you're eventually talking about actual sword play too. And you know, this is also considering the airflow when you are slicing with this mm-hmm. blade, which, you know, sword is a blade, a airplane wing is a blade, a helicopter rudder is a wing, is a blade, you know, in the way it cuts through the air, and their language reflects that as well. There's a lot of it's hard to explain. You know, a good example would be when I'm doing martial arts, you know, when I'm doing my my kickboxing and my boxing practices, when I do a strike, it's I usually go sia sa like that, and it's right, and it's out like that, which is very snake like too. Because you know, you're working off of your reflexes, and it's good to get a little snaky about all that with your reflexes.
How dare you?
Yeah, but you know, it's tones that cut through the air, like the s, like the s sound. You know, you get a lot of that. There's just something very on the air about the Asian language. It's also very interesting that they write sometimes in odd ways, like vertically or
right,
or
to, right left. To left.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, think about how the Japanese speak too. You know, it's like, it's like very forceful in that way. Same thing with like Chinese, I think it's like Cantonese, or like Hong Dong Huang. You get a lot of that Huang, like that air noise.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's a little bit more, kind of like you're pushing and accentuating on those vowels to push air more so when you speak, because your speaking is more focused on the air like that, right? Where I think that here, when we're speaking in this tongue, there's something more about just like my words need to charge you up, right? It's just like you know, I need to light a fire of inspiration, and so the tone has it uses a lot more consonants to just break up the sound in ways that are interesting and kind of like feed the fire to you in healthy levels instead of trying to burn you with everything that we have to say. And that's sort of the way that I think about it.
Yeah. I also couldn't help but notice that swords represent air in the tarot as well.
Yes. Because it's representative of the tongue and our words and why it's associated with the mind.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Good so culture. That was all an aside about runes.
Oh, it's all related. And especially for me, we, you know, you talk about runes, we can easily talk about tarot, because if anybody knows how I do readings, I synthesize in each position a rune with a tarot card. I'm one of the few guys out there who has experimented with this divination merging practice and have unlocked a really powerful kind of multi-dimensional reading ability that I can do for people. And you guys have both gotten readings from me in this style that I do. So I know that you can testify as you will, or you can throw me under the bus right now, you bastard.
Well, speaking of that, how can people find you if they do want a reading? We'll say it at the end too, Big Miles.
Yeah, for sure. My email, Zerilath, Zerilath, just like you will see right there, Zerilath at freedomslips.com. That's freedom, F-R-E-E-D-O-M, slips, S-L-I-P-S. And you can also find me, my YouTube channel, /... Zerilath, spelled the same exact way, obviously. Those are the best ways to follow me, and the more of my social media links are there. Maybe I'll just get a link tree now, because it's getting like that.
And I, you know, something I will say about your readings, I remember one of the first readings you gave me, and I think it was around the 4th of July last year, so it was just about a year ago.
If that was the first one, then that one is on my channel.
Oh, we recorded it, right?
Yeah, we recorded it, and then I made a whole slideshow. For it too.
And I still remember.
Was it at your meetup, like your mini meetup that you had at your house?
Yeah, little mini meetup by Bear.
Yeah. It was like the first or second time we had hung out or something like that. It was great.
Yeah, and I remember you pulled a rune that represented surrender, and it looked kind of like a peace symbol. So we talked about how the differences between peace, the peace movement, and being it's kind of like gets rid of the masculine aspect of it, but and then you explain surrender and what that actually meant and what it means to surrender some certain things that you are out of your control, that you just have to kind of give up to God, if you will. You have to surrender.
Yeah, in the Elder Futhark system, the rune called El Hajj or Al-Jiz, it can be pronounced either way in fluctuation. It represents the elk. It basically means elk, and it specifically is about the concept of protection, but it's like a mental protection, right? The elk is an antlered animal, right? And so those antlers come out the head at either side of the center of the forehead, which for on a man, if he were to have antlers, that would be the third eye area that it's that it pops out of. And so the antlers, they represent kind of like the psychic shield that we have. The antlers are only deadly if you are the aggressor, right? Because you know, the elk, the deer, all these different types, they don't want to use that stuff. They just want to be left alone. But if they feel like they're backed up against a wall, you know, if you ever seen how an elk moves, an elk doesn't do backwards very well. They don't like backwards. They can be kind of lateral, but they'd rather go forward, and they will impale you to save their lives. Right? But it's because they're defending themselves, as all of God's creatures have the natural inherent right to do. And so this is about invoking that defense in yourself, a defense that is not a threat to anyone except those who are a threat to you. It's a psychic defense on this level. Now, in other systems, they play it differently with the concept of Merc Stave, or when the rune is upside down, which means that the energy is blocked, and that is when it looks like the peace sign. If it's within a circle, that means surrender, right? Which that's the grabble on it, that's the twist, right? Is that it doesn't mean peace, it means surrender. Which peace is a result of surrender, but that's only peace for the winning party.
Right.
Yeah. And in other systems, at least as a writing mechanic, because of the way they play with their sounds, and I don't know all of that too well yet, but in various levels of the writing system, you'll see that Algie's rune upside down, and that means something different. And also, Algie's is supposed to be the Z sound, by the way, right? So, so it's one of my favorite runes for all sorts of various reasons, including the fact that it's associated with my pseudonym here, Zerilath.
Indeed. Do you have some of the runes there with you that you could?
I've got all 24 of my Elder Futhark.
And you say Elder what?
These are the Elder Futhark. they're called the Elder Futhark because these are from the oldest known full runic alphabet that we have seen on various standing stones and things of this nature. And it's called Futhark because that's the first six letters of it spell and can pronounce the word Futhark. F-U-T-H is one word, th A-R-K, or C, if you will. So I've got a whole bit of them here. This here was made out of, I don't know which what kind of tree this was. This was a stick I found in the forest that I had cut up, and so like this is one of them here. So these I carved myself. So I cut a branch into a chip, and then with a soldering pen, I burned in the Futhark. Then I used a drill bit to give it more depth and definition, and to smooth out the burning dots, because you're jamming it in and you're going into the wood. It's almost like you're tattooing the wood when you use the soldering pen this particular way. Here's Awaj. It's the original way was held like this. At a certain point, they started putting Awaj this way because it's the EH sound, eh, and then that became where we get our letter E from. So, because it looks like a uppercase M turned on its side, and that's where we get the letter E. In the regular alphabet is a derivative of Awaj turned on its side. And so there's 24 that are like this. This is Awaj. This is the E sound. It's usually like an EI sound, basically, E. And this is associated with the U tree, which is associated with death and rebirth because of its of the poisonous fumes that are given off by this U tree, and the fact that it's the tree goes in and out of the ground like this, and so the trunk of the tree eventually curves back in, becomes the roots of the tree, and then will pop back up and become the trunk of a tree again, and it'll snake through the ground up and down like that. Wow. Like a sine wave.
Interesting, because Michael Tesserion, I've heard him say that the roots of the word Jew are from you, from the U tree. Maybe that's where they got it from. So that's pretty interesting to know that, note that it's like a snake.
Interesting.
That'll bury itself in the ground and pop back up and then go back in the ground. I'm not saying anything.
That's interesting because we're also talking about Jew is also for Judah, the tribe of Judah, which tribe of Judah was the lion tribe. Allegedly. Yeah.
Allegedly. That's what I heard, everybody. I'm just saying. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Hey, look, man. I'm more interested in getting Yahweh back into like pagan standards. I don't mind Yahweh's existence. It makes a lot more sense when you limit him to the same level as all the other pagan gods in their station, in their agency.
Do you think
Yahweh's a fairly Saturnian deity, and that's okay?
I think it's like anything, it just depends. It's like any symbol, it could be used positively or negatively in that same way. So
yeah, it's just that, yeah, like just like Yahweh was religiousized so long ago and so uprooted by the tribe that preserved the discipline and then preserved this the scrolls and the scriptures that they wrote. That they when they forgot whatever was going on with their oral tradition, they just became super literalist about it and became as Jordan Maxwell called them and others called them before him, were the people of the book. because that's like, no offense, guys, but Christians, Muslims, Hebrews, and any other faith that is chapter and versing through life, you are people of the book. You are in a book club that poses as spirituality.
Well, with you saying that, I watched an Archaics recently. I think it was the one with Open Your Reality. And it's a couple of hours and it's really, really good. And he basically talks about, like, at the very beginning, like literally the first 20 minutes, he's talking about how he went into prison, basically a Baptist, right? And still holding on to those Christian traditions in his mind that, you know, it's Christian and I'm going to prove it by reading all these books. And he started reading all these books, which led him to he read the Bible multiple times over, which led him to read the book of Joshua, which was like, because it kept saying in like the book of Kings or one of those books is like, yeah, as it is written in the book of Joshua. So he went and looked for that book, and that took him to all the apocryphal texts.
I think it was actually Judges, right? That like somebody had finagled the book of Joshua to say that it was the book that Joshua was a man who was one of the judges, but Joshua was not a pronoun. He said it was not a name.
Yeah,
It was not like, I mean, it was the name of the book, but it wasn't named after a guy's name. It had a very particular meaning, and maybe somebody called their son Joshua, and then he wrote something down. But that's not what the book of Joshua is. The book of I forget what he said that it was, but it was titled as was what its record was about.
Yeah. So, all that said, he had looked through all these apocryphal texts, pseudepigraphal texts, and he came to the realization that the book of Genesis and the book of Revelation are basically bookends to material that was taken from, and I'm guessing it's right, the Old Testament, that's material that's taken from Babylon, from the Akkadians, from all these other places, and these peoples, these Jewish peoples or whoever they were, Hebrew peoples, co-opted the content and made it their own. And so this Yahweh, they made him their God. Whereas there was no mention of Yahweh in the Old Testament at all, ever. But all of a sudden in the book of Exodus, this Yahweh appears. So it doesn't, he said he was reading through Genesis and he's like, if you take Genesis and you read Genesis and then you read Revelation, he's like, it's like those like almost came from the same place, but all the other stuff in between did not come from them. It's like they took that material and then made it their own and put it in a book and made it their own.
Gotcha. Now I know that he said that Exodus was a big issue, but I didn't, I have to double check on a few things, 'cause I didn't quite remember any of those other details myself, but, I didn't get that from the Open Reality interview. I got that because he said it in one of his other videos too, 'cause he's repeated himself, a number of times to, when he's, elaborating on a prior point.
Right.
So I have to check that one out, because it is long. I think it's 3 hours, and I just haven't had three hours yet.
It was two. It was an hour and 50 minutes.
Okay.
And it's extensive, but it's very, and it's literally, he's talking about that in the first 20 minutes. I mean, he goes a little bit longer than that, but, you know, first 15 minutes, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like incredible.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's the bit about where Yahweh pops up. I could have sworn that Yahweh, that he did affirm that in the original text, Yahweh did pop up in Genesis, but it's
no, he said two. No.
Okay.
He said,
all right, I definitely want to double check that, because, in all the Bible, Hebrew translations that I've understood, is Yahweh gets thrown in there in chapter two. And that's why everybody's always talking. And I know Jason mentioned
they,
this too.
They say There's the Lord. Adam and Eve
right. No, they say the Lord in the English.
Right. That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yes. But they say the Lord in the English in chapter two, but that's substituted for Yahweh in the Hebrew. It says Yahweh in the Hebrew.
I can go look because I have this book that has the ancient Hebrew.
Okay.
And I can
go
look.
Show me what's up with that. Cause that's all well and good. Cause Lord,
I'll be right back. Keep it.
Sure. Yeah. Go for it. Cause I know that Lord is, yeah, I know that they inserted Lord in there.
Well, they also used Elohim.
They consistently use Elohim. Sometimes they're like Yahweh Elohim, right? So, which says one particular thing, right? Okay, it's an interlinear scripture. Great.
Very interesting.
What I do know is that it's not spelled in its pronunciation from the program of interlinear that I use for it, the interlinear scripture analyzer, the ISA, where it's not YHWH in the transliteration. It's like a series of vowels. It's like, I think there's like no consonants in it. It's like Yayo or something like that. It's almost like you're trying to say A-E-I-O-U. Right.
Okay. So
I'm saying all the vowels in order.
So I'm just looking, like, for example, in Genesis 2, and it's like Yahuwah Elohim. But so what I'm, and that's what they're calling God, right? Yahuwah Elohim.
Right.
And what my thoughts are like is that they went back and they edited Genesis to reflect the name Yahuwah. I'm just going to guess, because like in Exodus, it doesn't make sense to me.
No, I get you. Well, one of the other issues is that if you read Genesis 2:4, where they first say Yahweh Elohim.
Yeah.
It starts off by saying, these are the chronicle records. Here's one of the other things. There are not 31 chapters or 31 verses to Genesis 1. There's actually 33, because 2:1, 2:2, and 2:3 are supposed to be tagged off to the end of chapter 1. And then you start chapter 2 at what the standardized Bible has made verse 4.
Okay, I'm going to read starting from Genesis 2:1. Thus were finished the heavens and the earth and all the hosts of them, and ended Elohim on the day seventh, his work which he had made, and he rested on the day seventh from all his work which he had made, and blessed Elohim day the seventh and sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work which created Elohim and made these. And then okay, and that's it, that's the end of verse 3 of chapter 2. And then it says, these are the generations of the heavens and of the earth when they were created in the day made, that Yahuwah Elohim, which they hadn't said before.
Yes.
The earth and the heavens and every plant of the field before it was in the earth, and every herb of the field before it grew, etc., etc. Yeah. And I'm just going to show this so you guys can see.
No, it's all good.
I'm just saying so you can see how it looks.
For sure. Do I have share screen permission?
I could give it to you. All right, you're good.
All right. So here, you guys should be able to see that. This is my interscripture analyzer. So here's Genesis 2:4 for me, right? So here it gives you at the top is the Concordant Literal Version translation. These are the chronicle records of the heavens and the earth when they were created in the day that Yahweh Elohim made earth and heavens. And then you can see the Hebrew as it was written, the phonetic pronunciation of the Hebrew, and then the literal meaning of that particular Hebrew word. So I could read this in Hebrew to you. El thuduth ishim ui arts be Abraham bi'am oshuth ayua alim arts ushim. Right? And so alim, that's how you say Elohim. It's alim. And then Yahweh is I-E-U-E. So it's technically Yu-Yi. So there's the U right there, actually.
You.
I or I-E.
E-W-E.
You,
how dare you.
Yeah, how dare you.
Or right? The U-tree.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Ishim is the heavens. Ushim.
Or, Shamim. Shamim, because Shamim is heavens.
The Shamim. Excuse me. Thank you. Yes. Yeah, so the Shamim, that's the heavens. The Thulduth is genealogical records. So yeah, that's all in there. And so there's definitely paganism harshly buried in there, and the Bible should not be your source to relating to Yahweh on a pagan level. But
could it be? We don't make claims.
We're just making the point that if you can deconstruct far enough, you can already see that it's there in the Bible as a hint.
Interesting. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I had another thought because I have this little, I'll show it, but you had shown some runes and you said, this is where we get the letter E, something like that.
Yes.
Right. So back when I was studying Hebrew, I had bought myself some stuff to study and learn. And this was basically saying that it's kind of, I don't want it to like reflect.
Okay.
But it's basically showing the various, like, I guess, alleged transitions of our language. And look, I'm Illuminati confirmed. So like the transitions from where like the old Hebrew or the which really mm-hmm. was the Phoenician, right? And how it like transitioned into like Greek and all this other stuff till it became the English language. So the English alphabet, I should say.
Right.
And well, so
the influence was crept in and cleverly shifted. What's going on with the Hebrewic people is it's that our likeness to what you see in Hebrew or Sanskrit or anything like that, it's going much, much further back from the Indo-European migration aspect of things, because there is a significant Asian relationship. You know, this gets into the origin of the Caucasoids, you know, and I can reference once again with Archaics, you know, he talks about this stuff in the Anuna files and things like that, right? And that, like, the Caucasoid people, which would also end up being the people, you know, the white man, the North man, here, they don't come from the same line as those that went through these kinds of experiences in the Middle East. Even though there's a certain kind of relationship, the devastation of the flood, which then gets us to the point of Noah, the men of the North didn't have the flood. What we had was the Ice Age. It wasn't as long as the academics say that it was, but by the merit that it took the waters a long time to recede, and there were greater winters back then because the earth was still going through its shift from the last Phoenix event. You had this tremendous Ice Age period, and it was the Ice Age period that killed a lot of the prehistoric mammals, and it was not the end of the Ice Age that killed them the way that the scientists say that it did, because they had to revise it. They had to admit that the woolly mammoth actually was a warm climate animal, not a cold climate animal. Which, you know, you think, oh, well, it's woolly. Like, how's it stay cool in the summer? Like, there's a lot of, who knows? There's lambs. There's a rational explanation for that. I haven't looked into it yet because I'm not worried about the woolly mammoth right now.
What other animals have
wool? I can have one as
sheep,
my
and they get trimmed.
The Flintstones is actually the future, and it'll be a more advanced civilization, even though we're using our feet to power our cars.
Can't wait.
Indeed. So have you ever looked into Michael Tesserian's work? And if so, like, how do you feel like it meshes with what Archaics has talked about?
Oh, yes. I'm like Archaics now. I am a Tesserian sponge for anything I can get my hands on. I need to get myself a subscription to the Unslaved podcast. There's a lot of behind the paywall stuff that I haven't seen, and some that I have, thanks to BitChute. but yeah, no, I definitely consider myself a student of his studies. I think Michael Tsarion's a tower of information, along with David Whitehead, and people know that I am colleagues with a friend of theirs, Sethicus Boza. So shout out to Sethicus Black Earth Productions, because I've gone, part of my magical discipline is foundationed in initiation with Sethicus's teachings, which really perfectly resonated with me and got me to where I am over the last like 4 years, basically.
Awesome. Well, maybe before we chit chat a little bit toward the end about just, you know, other stuff, tell us a little bit about the Havamal.
The Havamal, the words of Har, as it will. Har is one of the other names for Odin. I forget what it means off the top of my head here, but with the Havamal, it is the equivalency of the Book of Proverbs in the Bible, and it is just it's various different levels of wisdom for any man to better himself, if you will. I'm just, yep, okay. Bear with me 1 second here.
Sure.
Yep.
No problem.
Yeah. Yep. Bear with me 1 second here. Just I'm gonna pull up the Havamal real fast in the Edda, and I just need to turn off my camera just for people passing through.
Oh, no worries.
Yeah, it's what I gotta deal with. All right, I think we're all all right. Whoops. Okay, like turn it back on. All right, and there may be another pass through coming through. I can only get so much studio privacy during the day.
No worries.
Okay, so let me just kick it off. I'll give you the examples that just come right off the top. With it, you know. In fact, let me. There we go. This is my favorite translation of the Havamal, of the Eddas in general, that I've done so far, which is by Chris Holm, is the name of the author who translated from the Old Norse, which you can see the Old Norse on the left, which is the best recollection we can of what's connected to the oral tradition. And so stanza one goes, watch out and check all gates before faring forth. One should spy around, one should pry around, hard to know what foe sits before you in the next room. So it opens itself up with, be careful about walking into a trap. Don't walk into traps in life. Have situational awareness, right? You know, the Havamal is considerably for those who are brave in their stature. Hold on a second. And if we run through this, you know, you go through several stanzas, and here's 20 as a good example about, hold on a second. That should be over with for now. Let me get back on the, darn it, on the video. Where'd the thing go? Shoot. Hold on, I got too many windows open now. I've caused my own confusion.
I like this. The greedy man without mind's wits eats himself in sorrow. Often he brings ridicule on himself when he's among the wise men who mock the man's belly. Because he's eating sorrow.
All right. There we go. I'm back. All right. Yeah. So let's see. Whoops. Oh my God.
So they're basically like proverbs, like you said.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But they're it's very different. It's very, very different than what you get out of the concepts of biblical proverbs, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's see. Here's like 134 when you're getting way down towards the end here, right? There's a number of these which talk about there's a conversation occurring with a king named Lodfafnir, kind of similar to Fafnir, who is a dwarf who turned into a dragon that Tolkien based Smaug upon. And so he's talking to him, and he gives you reed, R-E-D-E, which I think reed means like to tell you something, and heed it well. You will use it if you learn it. And so like those two lines are like repeated over and over again during this part of it. And then it goes, it will get you good if you understand it. Never laugh at the hoary sage. The old often speak wisely and clearly. Wise speech often comes from the dried skin that hangs with the hides, dangling with the furs and swinging among the bushes. Right. So it's basically saying, like, if you've met somebody, you know, out there who's been in the world, who is old, you know, they're a survivor. They've seen a whole lot of things. You know, it's all that basic stuff about, like, you can expect wisdom from elders. Now, of course, when this was written, nobody knew laziness. So you can be old and not wise because of comforts and things like that. But this is true in the world where you are old and you lived in strength, and you know, you didn't let weakness guide your life path. And that's the kind of wisdom that gets referred to. And so it is believed that this is like the gnosis of Odin. This is like logos, but it's coming from Odin himself, and it's just the wisdom of the Indo-European peoples in a consolidated fashion. And that's what the Havamal of the collection of the poetic Eddas is all about. There are words in here for how to treat women. There's words in here being wary about alcohol. There's words in here about when to speak and when not to speak, so on and so forth. All these different things. And you will see Havamalic state of mind coming out of any well-written Norse saga. With the men of honor and the reasoning behind the way they treat towards one another. Why did this man earn another's disrespect? Why did a man earn another's respect? Right? Matters like this. That's in the Havamal.
I like it. Kind of reminds me of the Tao in a way, the Tao Te Ching. And it's funny, we were talking earlier about fire and air and water and stuff. So this would be more of the fire application, I guess you could say, where the Tao would be more of the wind, the air.
Good call.
Thank you.
Yeah. It seems to have a more fiery tone to it, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Precisely, precisely. And that can scare people. I recently uploaded a video about the issue that comes with people, even if they're like more spiritually minded people, just with shadow work and with the primal nature of paganism and stuff that comes from Odin isn't even as primal as the stuff that you, like I said, that you get from like those Vanir gods, which are the earth gods. But there's definitely still primalism, because like the wolf spirit is more akin to the Aesir in most respects, especially because of all the wolves associated with Odin, or the wolves associated with Loki, who's not an Aesir, but he is, but his spirit is definitely not. That's a complicated subject.
Yeah,
you know, Loki is is inherently complicated.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But yeah, yeah. So, people get put off by this manner of the really strong, like no bullshit, capable of violence man, right? Regardless of how noble or good he is, if you are like afraid of those that would use force to solve problems, under the assumption that force is never necessary, and should never be even expressed, let alone used, right? Like there's always an expression of, I am here, I stand my ground, this is my honor, right? That there's always these kinds of themes that go on here. And it's just like, this is my sacred space to burn as my heart desires.
Awesome. Well, we are as Crow says, getting to close to the second hour. So, I guess I wanted to, I know you'll tell people where you're located and stuff, but maybe just give us a little bit of a background on how you started podcasting and maybe an idea for some of the topics you cover, and how people can find you, because I know there's a lot of material on your your YouTube channel.
By 2012, I had realized that it seems like it's up to me to take everything that I learned and to put it out there somewhere to help people think, you know, to help them solve the problems going on with the world of conspiracies and personal development and all these different things. By 2012, I decided I wanted to do that. And through going around, like listening to various alt media, whatevers, I eventually found the attention of the people at Revolution Radio, which is where my email comes from, the freedomslips.com. That was the original website domain for Revolution Radio. And I became a host there to do that stuff for a long time while I was also doing YouTube. During a part of my process, I committed digital seppuku a few years ago and restarted my YouTube channel from scratch, deleting a whole lot of things that that I just needed to lift off my chest, including some things I was sad to part with, like memories of my bearded dragons and things like that. So like at that point, I just started finding the time to put in to say, like, look at this thing I studied. I'm putting it together. This is my understanding of it. I think you'll understand it. Or maybe I'm just talking crazy, but I got to get it out. And so, you know, I put together these rants or something prepared, or I want to read something to you and then talk about it and all that stuff. And then I'm also just going through my personal development journey, not just being some sort of research analyst, not a researcher, but a research analyst. I'm looking at other people's research and I'm collating it together.
That's awesome. So, I guess before we, end the call, can you tell us about your pet iguana?
Oh, why, yes, I can. Let me take a minute to go grab Locke, L-O-C-H. I named him after the Scottish word for lake.
Loch Ness.
Because I'm of Norman descent, and I didn't want to be cliche and name him Nessie, so I named him Locke instead. Without thinking of it, I'm like, you know, like subconsciously, that's naming him Loki, isn't it? You know, so like,
there you go.
And an iguana is a perfect, you know, it's yeah. There's definitely that because the reptiles are great because of the relate. You know, you learn a relationship with the reptilian brain, which is learning to have a relationship with your nervous system, with your lower self. And just your interaction on a reactionary level, and it's disciplined, self-controlled, and fearless level with the rest of the world. So give me a second to go grab him from his high station, so that way my reptilian handler can grace us with his presence.
Okay.
Looks like we might have to look into the Havamal a little more, maybe start quoting it on the show or something.
Yeah, I haven't ever read it, but I've been wanting to for a while, ever since our dear friend Warlock mentioned it like many moons ago.
I also love the classic G.I. Joe lunchbox in the background. That's great.
Oh, you see it? I don't even see it.
Ah, there he is.
There's Ooh. Little Locke. Little yes. Loki.
Oh yeah. Little Locke.
Little Loki.
There we go. I'm gonna at least have my glove on one hand this particular time. Spare myself a little bit of pain.
Hey, buddy.
I usually just take the pain and my hand takes the cuts, but I don't feel like dealing with it today.
Yeah.
There he is.
And what does he do? Like what? Just chills all day.
He just chills all day, climbs around and jumps around. But yeah, no, everything's pretty relaxed, you know, cause he's fed, he's watered. He just likes to have his high place, has a good time.
Awesome.
And that's like the funny thing about reptiles is like, we always think about reptiles in the context of when we watch them doing stuff and whatever. Like a reptile is literally always in a meditative state, except when they're not. it's simple. Like they just, in between basic animal needs, they'll just sit there and look at stuff. And they'll just sit there like that, lounging. Lounging lizards. You ever heard about lounging lizards like that? And it's just like, yeah, that's what he'll do. You know, he'll chill up in a tree. Then if he gets hungry or if he has to poop, he'll go where he wants to go to do those particular things, so on and so forth. And once in a while, you know, he'll get an energy kind of rush and he'll want to like scurry around a little bit in the cage or something like that.
What kind of cage is it?
I built it because they don't make cages big enough for iguanas. So I did some carpentry work on my own. Had to buy all sorts of materials by Home Depot. And I built like this 7-foot tall structure that I have in the living room upstairs now. It's like a giant cabinet size kind of thing. You know, I had to build the lighting fixtures into the roof and the humidifier system. Into it as well and put the timer up, and it's built with like wood and chicken wire and lots of
I figured chicken wire,
lots of screws and things like that. Yeah, and it's not very heavy, but it's a pain in the butt if I have to get on top of it because it's 7 feet tall and I'm 5'6". Just a couple of Rogans over here, folks. I'm built like a dwarf.
Dwarf. What was the dwarf's name? The most famous one on Lord of the Rings?
Gimli.
Gimli.
Gimli. Gimli.
Son of Gloin.
Oh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for coming on our show, and thank you for sharing your wealth of knowledge on Norse mythology and everything that, well, not everything, but as much as we possibly could fit into
hours. You guys got a lot of footnotes. You go to my channel. Listen, I try to organize the really juicy stuff into playlists. Go browse my playlists. You'll get an idea.
Awesome. So just a reminder to everybody where they can find you.
Yep. You, if you look through my name across most of social media, you're going to find me, the Zerolath@freedomslips.com email that I mentioned earlier, Zerolath YouTube channel, which is where I do most of my primary activity. You get notifications about something like that. Zerolath, divinations on Facebook, which also you can contact me there too about getting a tarot and rune reading, and you know, I'm on MeWe and all these other places. You just gotta look up Zerolath, basically.
Awesome. Well, silly me.
You'll see it all in those social medias too. All the links are on everybody else's links.
Awesome. And dare I ask, and maybe not make it like super long, but how did you come up with the name Zerolath?
Ancient Etruscan, tapping into the Italian side that I get from my mother. Mm-hmm. I was looking up Etruscan words, and the word Zeri means like a free individual, or like it even kind of means like the number one in a certain context, I think. But you know, I saw the definition of a free individual and Zelath, which means a cultural functionary, kind of like a shaman, if you will. So I put the Zelath and the Zeri together to make Zerolath.
Well, it's very clever and it's unique.
Very
and
unique.
It's you.
Yeah. Thank you. That's great.
Very
well,
awesome.
Well, let's give a shout out to the chat. Thank you guys for hanging out so much. It's like the favorite part of our week. We always say that we have the best listeners, the best Sharonites over Sharonites. And Zerolath is often in there, so I'm sure he'll be in here right now. So if you want to say anything to him, you could just come to the chat and say it right in there. And if you have any questions for him, just put them right under below this video, wherever you see it, and we'll make sure that he sees it if he doesn't see it right away on his own.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to get the day off the day after this premieres.
Oh, good idea.
That way I can. That way I don't have to go to bed early.
Yeah.
Oh, good call.
Awesome. And what else was I going to say? What do we say at the end of the show? Oh, yeah. So if you have any questions or whatever, let us know. Oh, that's what I was going to say. Go check out his stuff because it's packed with gravy. He talks, so much more extensively than he could talk in this short period that he shared with us. So go check it out.
Yeah.
And
as you can imagine from my references to Mongolia, I have quite an interesting take on Tartarian concepts. And I came up with ideas that then you are came up with after I had said them. So that's on the record.
That's
yeah,
cool.
There you go. Exactly. So check it out. And let if you do, I can't even talk right now. If you do check him out, comment on his stuff and let him know that you saw him on the Oversharing show. This way he knows that and he could pay us our royalty fee. Just kidding.
And let them know where they can support us.
Yeah, go to morelawsmoreproblems.com, click on the Oversharing tab, and there's several ways that you could support us there. And the best way you could support us is just by showing up in the chat every Thursday night and hanging out with us and leaving comments, thumbs up on our videos, and overshare with anyone that you think might be interested in this content. We don't want you to woke rape people, though, but you know how it goes. there he goes.
Yep.
He's just
I had to grab him from up there.
Nice.
Oh, he's chilling. Oh.
Oh, there he goes. Dun, 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 dun,
see how many things he knocks over this time. I'm always gambling how many things he's going to knock over.
Uh-oh.
That's funny.
He might just sit there.
He might poop. You never know.
No, don't you dare. I got too many things over there that I don't want to see with nitrates and salmonella.
Exactly.
There you go. It's called climate. Climate. That's what they want to see. Perform, circus monkey.
Right.
There he is.
There he goes. He's getting up there.
Oh, wow. Look at
blackout him. Curtains.
Well, at least he gets a lot of exercise. Yeah. That's awesome.
It's fun watching him when he is trying to go places and things like that.
Yeah, I got to imagine it's very zen-like.
Yeah. It's, all right, well, it's cool.
Thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate it and really appreciate all your knowledge, just like Sharon was saying. And what do we say to the good people, Sharon?
That if you're not over Sharon,
then you're totally not Karen.
That's right.
So share and overshare on. All right, everybody. Oh, I guess you have to.